So good evening. It's a little different format. Hi, Shlomi. Great you could join us. So I thought I would just make a few comments on shamatha. Sometimes we just do a practice and we just sit down and we get into a sort of a rut and we forget, you know, what we're actually doing. So I thought it would help just to look a little bit tonight at the view of shamatha and vipassana. So we are now in module 13, amazingly enough, and we are teaching this module as an introduction to Mahayana. So as a transition, I thought it would be important to talk about the meditation practice of shamatha and the meditation practice of vipassana, because vipassana is a bridge between the Hinayana practices, and particularly the shamatha practice, which goes through everything. I'm not saying it's only in one particular yana, but the vipassana practice in particular is an opening, further opening into the Mahayana, the great vehicle, the wider path. So in terms of shamatha, we could just think about why we actually even come to this practice. Why do we practice at all? And many people say they're looking for peace, their mind is crazy, there's just so much confusion in their life, and they sit down on the cushion to find some kind of space or relief. And actually, shamatha means calm abiding or peaceful abiding, which, as I said before, isn't often the experience that we have when we first sit down to meditate. And it's really discouraging when people hear what it means and they think, I'm doing it wrong. But and when you start teaching meditation, I'm sure you'll be telling people that, yes, we've all been there. So we have all been there. So we may think we have, we may come with a lot of expectations. Meditation will make me calm, peaceful, relaxed, happier, more joyful, whatever. And then we find something actually unfolds that's quite different. So not to be too discouraged, since none of us are, we keep coming back. But it's interesting. We are actually developing a state of abiding. So the abiding part is holding your mind on an object. And that object, in this case of meditation, is the breath. But there's also other practices that use the focal point, like holding your mind on a statue of the Buddha or a rock or something more tangible. And the peaceful or calm part does actually, we do enter into that space. Occasionally it comes, once in a while. So the practice of shamatha, the way it's first described, is a practice in the context of meditation on the cushion or sitting in a chair. So it's really a practice that's developed through this discipline of taking your seat, working with your posture, your body, working with breath and that focal point of meditation, and working with the mind or thoughts. So most importantly, what we're doing is stopping. And if you think about that, we're almost always in activity. Some level of activity is happening constantly in our life. In fact, we get extra points if we can do at least four things at once. So this practice cuts activity. And why does that matter? Is it just about trying to find some kind of stillness? Actually, what we're cutting is this karmic trajectory. By actually sitting there and not doing anything, we're We're allowing this space to open, and we are basically interrupting, particularly when we're working with thoughts, and we're willing to actually come back to the breath or to let go on the out-breath and to allow there to be space. We're cutting the karmic stream, and that is the stream of generating passion, aggression, and ignorance, and the results of that. There's a constant generation of the things that we do that lead to some type of outcome, maybe positive or negative or neutral. But sitting and just being present and just being still has a very profound effect that we don't even, I think, see for a while. So this stopping, not moving body and not moving mind. The mind is still going to move just as the thoughts arise and dissolve like the waves on the ocean. There's a quality of that motion happening. But we are willing, if we start to go off and get lost, we're willing to cut that track and come back. And I think that is one of the most powerful and important parts of shamatha practice. That interrupting, going off into fantasy or confusion, and allowing yourself to come back to this open space. And that's really the calm abiding part, is the possibility of this open space that we keep coming back to. The other aspect, I think, of shamatha that's extremely important is equanimity. And this is the idea that the thoughts, we don't favor, like, dislike, or we just whatever comes up, there's a very neutral quality to how we work with our thoughts. So we're not judging, we're not getting hooked by them, and we're not we're whatever comes up, even if it is an emotion, at this point of shamatha, the first step here is to really just acknowledge thinking and come back to the breath. And I think this training in equanimity is very, very profound, and it has, I think, bigger effect on us than we really realize at first, because there's a real developmental aspect from that point. As we train in not jumping towards and believing our thoughts, we actually provide more space, and more space to see, and more space to let things dissolve on their own. So I was thinking there might be new people here, and I was going to go more into some different aspects of shamatha, but you're all very familiar with it. So I'll just say a few things, particularly about breath. Sometimes people tend to hold their breath and then expel their air all at once, or they'll find that they're holding their breath and then they just breathe. They don't realize they've been holding it. So it's important to realize you want to work with the natural breath and not hold your breath in any way and not manipulate your breath in any way. So maybe notice that once in a while and just see, check in. So instead of sort of sitting down, sometimes I just sit down and I go on automatic pilot or something, and I don't really review those three points, which are posture And I'm finding actually doing yoga, I'm more aware of my core strength, and I've been starting to work more with actually drawing in around the navel, and it strengthens my back, and then I can drop open the chest and drop the shoulders open and drop naturally. So I think we can use different trainings to come to more realization about these the postures that we're being trained in. So breath, it's interesting when I realized that when I teach meditation, I never talk that much about this 25% attention on the breath that Trungpa Rinpoche talked about, and that leaves 75% attention on hello, what? I thought we were working with our breath, but it's very interesting, this technique. It's concentration, which is, you know, it's a little bit of an extreme word, but they use that word for shamatha. So there's a sense of really paying attention to the breath, but at the same time, there is a sense of spaciousness around the breath, or panoramic awareness, you could say. So I find that interesting, because I actually never teach that, I realize. And I have to ask myself, that's interesting. Why is that? But if you can use that in your practice, and if it helps you, please do. And we'll have a discussion period at the end, so we'll have a chance to share what, you know, we kind of go through too, and our own practice and what we learn. The other thing that a lot of people will say is, I have so many thoughts, I can't stop them. And I know it's disheartening for people to hear that that's not the point, to try to stop them. But in fact, trying to push against the river isn't really the way that's going to get us anywhere. We have to realize that the thoughts arise, and it's not something we're trying to get rid of. We're not trying to dispel thinking. But in fact, it's just part of the energy of what mind does. And I think that's another key point. It's about looking at things as they are. And this is really what the mind does. The mind will keep, there'll be energy that keeps arising from the mind. And we're not trying to turn off the faucet, and we're not trying to stamp down anything, nor do we get lost in thinking. The other most important thing, I think, is about this aspect of the gap. And the reading I put online, we'll just have some time to discuss if you want to, but basically that teaching on the gap is so important, because this is the beginning of the opening of connecting with unconditional mind. It's the space where there is not conceptual thought. So when we open into that gap, that open space, there can just be a sense of relaxation or opening. And in shamatha, it may be quite small. And we'll see when we talk more about vipassana. We're going to emphasize that aspect. So this aspect of clarity and starting to see more clearly comes out of the shamatha practice. And the image that's often used is a muddy pond, or if you put dirt in a jar and shake it up, the mud is just circulating and it's cloudy, and then it settles down. And I think that is a good image for meditation, of this practice of meditation, where there is a sense of settling. And one thing that's slightly, I'd say, a disadvantage to most of us in this particular time and place in history is we don't really have long periods of meditation. And when you go through a long program, you have a chance to really let your mind settle. I know when I used to go on meditation retreats, it would always take at least 2 days before I actually arrived at the place. And I see Elise shaking. Yes, it's 2 days. It just seems like, how can I have that many thoughts? But after 2 days, things start to... You've been through every thought that you ever had in your whole life over and over, at least 20 times. You're tired of everything. And then there's just sort of give up. And at that point, you feel like there is a glimpse of this calm abiding, and it's actually comes to you. So then again, if we have more chance to practice in more extended way, that is really important. So I think I need to stop there. Thank you. I can turn that off. So because this is just focused on meditation, I wonder, does anyone want any help with their posture or have any questions about that? And, you know, it depends if you want anything or not. Now, I think, I've worked with John on getting a higher seat.
And can the attorney, sir?
Oh, yes.